And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
Welcome to Culture Calculus. I'm Kavitha Davidson, as always joined by my co-host Jason Jones, Sacramento Kings beat writer for The Athletic. We are super pumped to welcome Gail Devers, the woman, the legend, to the show on this Olympics week. Gail, thank you so much for coming on and excited to jump in with you. Three gold medals, five-time world champion, Hall of Famer. How do you look back on everything that you've accomplished and been through?
Oh my goodness, I look back and say I'm old. No. It's, you know what, I feel like I'm blessed, definitely, to have gone through all the things that I've gone through in my career, not just, you know, winning the gold medals. I always tell people see the on the track scene. They see the glitz and the glory. They don't see the behind the scene. And for me, you know, there was a lot that led up to me getting to the Olympic Games. I was, 1988, going into my first Olympic Games. And when you're supposed to have your world to, you know, to look forward to, your whole future, and mine started crashing down. I always say it felt like the bottom was pulled out from underneath me. And it was, you know, in May of 88, I had broken an American record in the hurdles. So my time was 12.61. Mm-hmm. And statisticians were like, okay, gosh, wow, if she gets to the game and she just runs that well, she's probably gonna be a medalist. You know, and I'm like, okay, I'm young, first Olympic Games, okay, I got this. And I get, well, first of all, making it making the team at the Olympic trials, I was trying for the 100 and the 100 meter hurdles, had to pull out the 100 because it was just too much, taking too much out of me, and we didn't know why. I made the hurdles, I always tell people I made it by the grace of God. And then by the time I got to Seoul, everything fell apart. I mean, I ran slower than the first time I run from high school. There's a problem. And then when I look at the stats, the silver medal time was 12.61. I'm like, hey, that was supposed to be my medal, you know, but it's coming forward past that. I came back to the States and you just know, you know, I always tell people I keep like sticky notes and they're like, I signed them. And it's a constant reminder to me of my goals and my dreams. And I always feel like I set realistic goals. And so when it doesn't work out, it makes you wonder. And I'm like, no, I'm pretty detailed in how I set my goals. And so I started going to the doctors, trying to figure out. And they were like, well, you know, maybe you peaked too many times. I'm like, I don't think that's right. You know, and they're like, but maybe, you know, I've been wrong. And it's like, you know, well, then I started noticing signs and symptoms, like my nails that were normally long unless I did something crazy and I cut them. Not that they broke, they started breaking. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, that's something. My hair usually is long. I mean, I cut it now, but it's usually long. It started falling out. And I was never bald completely, but I was bald in spots. I remember my heart rate was like, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm having a heart attack all the time. I mean, I had heart palpitations. My resting heart rate was something really ridiculously crazy. And then I started losing a lot of weight. Mm-hmm. And now the weight was so much that I got to the point where it was like I was a skeletal of the person that I know.
I think I saw you weighed 76 pounds at one
point. Yeah, I was like 79. I stopped getting on the scale. So I don't actually know how far I went down, but I stopped getting on the scale because I'm like, you keep telling me there's nothing wrong. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't the same doctor. I was like, let me go to somebody else and see if they know what they're talking about. I was constantly tired. And I think that was with your heart racing and being tired, it doesn't work. But yet I couldn't sleep because I had insomnia. When I did sleep, everybody was like, oh, that's because I didn't realize. I stopped looking at the mirror, actually covered my mirrors, that my eyes were bulging. And so when I tried to lay down and go to sleep and close my eyes wouldn't close all the way. So you can imagine that's kind of scary for little kids seeing that, like, ugh. So, and it just, it went on for 2.5 years. 2.5 years. And I mean, I had written a resignation speech to give to my coach to say, you know, you're out here with all these great athletes. I feel like I'm taking up your time. I got to go. And he thankfully didn't accept it. He said, we'll figure this out. I mean, I was jogging, pulling my hamstring. How do you pull your hamstring jogging? You know, so I was losing like muscle atrophy. It was just thing that you could think of. I always tell people, I believe, because anything that can go wrong did go wrong at this time. And it just, I think for me, the answer was when I finally got diagnosed, even though it was 2.5 years later. You know, I had to stop running. So my career was sidelined. All I prayed every day, and what I wrote on my sticky notes, was that I just want to catch up to Gail. I got to catch up to the old Gail. And it's like, I tell people the hardest part about having my Graves' disease at that time was not having it. It was the not knowing. It was having your life in limbo, not knowing what tomorrow was going to bring. I had what I call like what looks like vitiligo. So if you have a sore and it turns into a scab and then it lifts. So I had where it would lift, it was like white or very, very light with no melanin. So I had that on my hands and on my face. I couldn't stand the way I look. I mean, I termed myself alligator woman because I was like, who is this? My eyes are bulging. And then I didn't even realize because I had stopped looking. I had a goiter, so which is like a big lump at the base of my neck. So my dream come true, so to speak, was the day that I walked into that office and that doctor told me, you're walking thyroid disorder. And I mean, the tears started flowing. I was like, oh my gosh, thank you. At least, you know, I'm not
finally have a diagnosis, a reason, right?
Yeah, I'm not a washed up athlete, you know? And it was just, I was like, from there, I was like, where's my sticky notes? You know, I got to brush them off. They're a little dusty after 3 years, but I got to get back out there. I got to get back out there. You know, I couldn't really run on the track when everybody else was. So my coach brought a stationary bike out to the track. And when everybody else was warming up, I get on my bike. And they did speed work, I go faster. You know, they cool down, I go slower. And then I always tell people, now you guys are young, so you may not even remember this, but when I couldn't go in the weight room right away. And so, because I couldn't put shoes on and different things. So when everybody was lifting weights, back in the day, we used to have like the really thick, like yellow pages, white pages on telephone books. See, okay, hey, you guys.
I feel
really, really old when I tell people.
I know what you're talking about.
Okay, good. So yeah, so I used to strap those on with ACE bandages on my hamstrings and do like leg curls, do whatever I could do to keep some kind of strength, you know, keep it going so that when I was able to get on the track and run, that's what I did. But you know, it took 3 years, but I was back. And my first race, well, not my first race, but later on that year, I ended up running at the World Championships. I ran 12.63, so I was catching Gail. And you know, everybody else was like, I'm tired, I'm going home. I'm like, I can't go home, send me back over to Europe, I still have work to do. And I ended up breaking my American record and running 12.48. So then I was on a mission. So yes, I mean,
and then you win a gold in 92 in Barcelona. I mean, that's just wild.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Well, you know, so do you guys read? So you said you watch. Back in the day, and I always say that because my daughter Legacy says anything that refers to when I ran was called back in the day.
Oh, that's how I write. We can't have that now. No, because I remember back
so
in the day.
Disrespectful.
So I'm not going to stand for that.
I will tell her. So when I ran in 92, I was in lane 2. So back then, what they used to do, if they thought you were one of the ones to win, they gave you lanes 4, 5, and 6.
Right.
So they gave me lane 2. So I always tell people, you see what they thought about me. And from there, what I took is that it doesn't matter what other people believe about you, is what you believe about yourself and what you're willing to work for. And I saw myself throughout my 2.5 year time being silent, I saw myself crossing that finish line. And so to see it happen, and you know, it was definitely a dream come true.
Was that thought what kept you going over that time? Because a lot of people would have given up after a year. You say, you know what, I'm sick, we can't figure this out.
Right. Well, you know what track and field was my life. And like, I mean, I'm serious when I say I got sticky notes everywhere. When I write it down and I write that as a goal and I sign it, you know, word is bond. So I sign my name because it means I'm committed. And when I set my goals, I like to think that I set a realistic goal of something that can be accomplished. So that's what was fueling me and wanting, keeping me, like you said, keeping me going, saying, I got to get back to Gail. Cause if I don't get back to Gail, what's worth being here? You know, that's my reason for getting up every morning. That's what I do. So I got to get back to that. Then I can decide, once I catch her, then I can decide what else I want to do with my life.
I mean, that's just incredible perseverance and strength of all kinds of, all different kinds of strength, mental strength, physical strength, right? Did you, a lot of Black women have talked about, you know, their experience with doctors and not being believed when they, you know, present symptoms. Did you experience that before you got your Graves diagnosis?
Girl, I thought, they had me thinking I was crazy. Mm. They had me, I was in a very, 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 very dark, low spot. And I always tell people, the walls are closing in on you and there's no way out. Because if you rely on your body as an athlete and your body's letting you down and you go to the medical profession for help and they're telling you that there's nothing wrong, how would you feel? Right. You know what I'm saying? And this went on. It got to the point that I started looking through my provider book saying, oh, that name sounds interesting. Let's see if he or she knows what they're talking about. That's how bad it was. And I think what brought me out of it was thinking about that, okay, maybe I'm making this up in my head. Maybe they're right. But the last time I looked at myself, or when I went to wash my face or brush my teeth and I couldn't look at myself, why? Because the person that was looking back at me was not me. Mm-hmm. Let me know that I've got to reach deep down inside myself and I got to be my own advocate for my own health. I fought for my life. That's right. What I was fighting for. I was fighting for my life and my life was running. So I was really trying to get to the point where I could run for my life. And you know, which is why for me, you know, I take July very serious, because knowing the statistics of those people who have it, and I don't think anybody should have to suffer the way I suffered, you know. And so July is like, and not just July, but especially July, because at least people will pay attention. It's like, this is Graves' Disease Awareness Month. Mm-hmm. I need everyone to know the symptoms. If you're having these symptoms, you need to go in and get yourself checked so that you can make sure, and let's make up numbers. Let's say there's 10 million Americans who have Graves' disease. I need 10 million Americans under a doctor's care, mm-hmm. not 10 million Americans wandering around aimlessly trying to figure out where their answers come from. And the crazy part of all of this is that I thought I had my life back. I'm like, okay, yeah, I went back to the Olympic Games and people are like, you're good, right? I'm like, I still had some issues that I was like, okay, you know, eye issues for the main part. I mean, I still had like the redness where people were like, oh, you got pink eye, you have allergies. I'm like, I don't have allergies. I don't have pink eye. I don't wear contacts. Nothing got messed up. I don't know why my eyes are red like that. You know, I don't know why I still have like when at nighttime when cars are coming at me and their lights kind of bother me. I don't know why that's happening. I just assume that all the things, you know, even when I was running, it felt like, you know, running over the hurdles was blurry, but I'm like, it's a rhythm race. Okay, I'm good. I know how many steps out of the blocks and in between the hurdles into the finish line, I'm just going to run a rhythm race. I wish it would clear up, but it didn't, but at least I have my life. You know what I'm saying? So then 30 years that I've been dealing with this. And I just recently found out that 50% of people who have Graves' disease may develop something called thyroid eye disease, which is what it's related to the Graves' disease, but it's separate. So I wouldn't have known unless I went to a specialist, like an oculoplastic surgeon or a neuro-ophthalmologist, which I've done now. And now I've been diagnosed with having thyroid eye disease, but that's 30 years after the fact.
Right.
You know, I always say I'm a sprinter. Sprinters are supposed to get to the finish line quickly and first. And I've taken this like long, you know, I did run a half marathon before the pandemic. So I figure maybe I must be a distance runner now and I got to take the long route. But 30 years, you know, 30 years is way too long. And I want to thank you guys, first of all, for helping me to pass this word out and let people know that if you've got Graves' disease, pay attention to your eye health. Because I always tell people, I always, you know, I'm in the public eye and I'm supposed to be camera ready, but I can't unless I've got drops or something next to me, you know, and you shouldn't have to do that. You shouldn't have to do it. Get yourself treated sooner. If I had been treated sooner, I would have, you know, I wouldn't still be living with the things that I'm living with. So it's just, it is what it is. And I figure I went through it for everyone else. I wanted to be a teacher. My way, I would have been in the classroom, but look at me. I've got the world as my classroom. And so what I'm going to do, I'm going to adopt you guys as my relay runners. Mm-hmm. And on the relay, what do? We get the baton around the track, right? To the finish line. So our goal, as far as like a finish line, is making sure everybody knows it. The 10 million that we're going to make up that has it, and the 5 million who are going to get TED, we're going to make sure they all have that information. Because in this relay baton, there's information and there's knowledge. And I will not rest until people know it. I mean, I just got a letter from somebody who's saying that they had some of these symptoms and, oh my gosh, you know, I didn't even pay attention to my eyes, but thank you for bringing that to my attention. And when I hear that, it makes me feel good that I'm doing my part. My goal this year, on my sticky note, I wrote, my goal this year is to be the best me that I can be and to touch somebody's life and make a difference. And mm-hmm. and this is allowing me to do that. So thank you guys for being a part of the team now.
Talking about training. After you're diagnosed, and we know in track and field, training is so strenuous, and with the rules about what you can do and what you can take and everything, just how did you manage to still train at such an elite level while also managing Graves' disease? And like you said, not even knowing what your eye condition was, but still staying within the confines of, okay, what can I do, not do? Just what was that juggling like?
You know what? I always tell people, because they were like, wasn't there something they could give you to help? There are beta blockers. But, you know, as in track and field, you're not appointed. You pick that event. You pick that sport. You don't have to run track and field. I chose to come back and run. That was my life. That's what I wanted to do. So I knew that there were certain things, you know, we have a 1-800 hotline number that you call to find out. I mean, I was probably overkill. Like even if I went to the dentist, I made my dentist call to find out what Novocaine, is that appropriate? Mm-hmm. Write it down so we have a list of it. So I just took extra precautions just to make sure, because I didn't want to get my life back to have it taken away in another way. I'm living, but I can't do the things that I want to do. And I figured as long as I'm under a doctor's care, it's got to be better than when I was not under doctor's care and not having any answers. So I was just very cautious of what I did. Like people laugh when I say I never took vitamins. They're like, I didn't take anything. Cause I'm like, all I took was my thyroid medication, which I take every day for the rest of my life in order to live. And I believe that's a very small price to pay to have the quality of life that I have. So anything that came along with that, which probably is why it took me so long to be diagnosed with my thyroid eye disease, because I, as an athlete, said, I just got to be tough. I got to deal with it. You're living, you're doing what you want to do, deal with it. Nobody should have to do that. And that's why I want to get the word out that don't be Gail.
When did you first kind of want to become this like spokesperson or raise awareness? Like how did that realization come to you?
When I was at home trying to figure out answers, I'm like, how many other people are like this? There's gotta be something wrong with me. I didn't just wake up and all of a sudden the talent that I had 2 months ago is totally gone. And you have no more shot at running anything fast ever again in life. It doesn't work like that. Mm-hmm. It just does not. There has to be something. And I wanted answers for myself. And then once I got those answers, and because it took so long, I'm like, absolutely not. Absolutely. How many people, you know, and the statistics tell you that women are 5 to 8 times more likely than men to develop it. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. They tell you that, you know, middle age, you'll get it. But I'm here to tell everybody, it does not discriminate.
Right.
It will hit you at any point. You need to know the symptoms, because it may not be you. But if you know the symptoms, I guarantee you, you're going to come in contact with somebody who's complaining of these same symptoms. And if you can save their quality of life, mm-hmm. that's what it's about. Person to person, helping each person's quality. We have one life to live. We got to help everybody be able to do the things that they want to do. You know, with this thyroid eye disease, it steals your identity. There are people who cannot drive. I mean, I've got a 16-year-old, blessed be. She just turned 16, got her license. Woo, woo, Carson. So she can always tell her, okay, you taking the nighttime drive, because the lights really bother me. But there are people who deal with it, who cannot deal with it.
Right.
Who cannot drive. They cannot work. They don't have anyone to get them where they need to be. Imagine how they are. I mean, imagine how we all felt even just during this pandemic of not knowing what's going to happen, what's going to be from day to day. So imagine having that and then compounding that with having an illness mm-hmm. or an ailment that strips you of your identity of who you thought you were maybe just a short while before. So from that, I'm like, you know what? No, I cannot accept that. You know, I know it tends to run in families. But no one at that time in my family had it. Mm-hmm. No one had Graves' disease. Nobody had anything. But now that I know that it's an autoimmune disorder, my mom has lupus. My youngest daughter has Kawasaki's disease. Mm-hmm. So there are things that lead to, you know, that, okay, it's in the family doesn't mean they'll get that, but we all need to be aware. We need to be conscious. And so a dream come true for me this year was being able to partner with Horizon Therapeutics to say, okay, look, you're on the same mission I'm on. Let's go. Let's go. I'm with it. And whatever we got to do, however long we've got to do it, we got to get it done. We got to educate people that you know the signs and symptoms for Graves' disease, but also know that there's something that's related, but it's separate. And if you have, pay attention to your eye health. And if you start having these symptoms, you need to get a separate doctor to treat it. And I say, there's a website. It's real easy. I mean, because I'm like, it can't be any easier than focus on TED. TED, TED, whatever you want to, however you want to say it, focus on TED.com. And that's going to help you get your life back on track right away. Not my route. So it's just one of those things.
With all of the things that you've had to overcome, and then you go on to win two individual golds, what is it like to retire from track and field after that journey that you took?
Oh, you know what? Okay, so let's talk about how long I was there. My goodness, you know, five Olympic Games. I always tell people I'm the grandmother of the sport. And so to be there and to win back-to-back gold medals in the 100 meters, for me, I love that I stand on the shoulders of those that came before me. Mm-hmm. You know, I always say I'm one that I know my history. The first gold medal in the 100 meters for women was in 1928 by Betty Robinson, USA. So, and then we've gone through our history. In the 60s, you had Wilma, then you had Wyoming, then you had Evelyn, then you had Florence, and then you had me. And I'm hoping that we can bring it back. We've got a great team going over there, and they're all running well, and we'll see what happens. Retirement for me has been, wow, I can breathe. You know, because when you're in it, you're in it. You're like, okay, detail, I don't want it. You know, I had insomnia when I competed. So I didn't like, you know, people like to get there early so they can acclimate. That was the worst thing for me. I'm like, when do I have to be there? You know, can I get there maybe just 4 hours before the race over in Europe? They're like, yeah, we like you to have a little more leeway than that. But because I had insomnia, I didn't need to sleep. It actually bothered me to just sit around. But I never did anything. You know, now that I'm retired, I can actually appreciate my sport. Mm-hmm. I've become a fan of my sport. When the Olympic trials, I had it taped. I watched all the Olympic trials. I watched the Paralympic trials. I watched gymnastics Olympic trials. I know we start on the 23rd. Gymnastics starts on the 24th. We got beach volleyball on Sunday. I'm a fan now. Right. I'm a fan, and it's cool. I've always said, you know, when I'm 60, 65, I want to be able to sit there and enjoy sports and watch. And I'm able to do that. So for me, I'm just, I can't wait. You know, we had great performances at our Olympic trials. I expect some world records to fall again. I expect, because you know, 400 meter hurdles for women and for men, because we've got Ry Benjamin, Karsten Warhol. So we've got all kinds of people. Grant Holloway in the 110 hurdles. He's going to break the world record because he was real close at the trial. So he just needed to save it. It's all good. Everything happens for a reason. I love the young athletes because they're beast mode. I mean, there's that young, he's 17 years old, Arian Knighton. And he was the one that he ran and then he didn't even stop to take an interview. He just kept going. I'm like, he'll learn. Just leave him alone. You just bring him back later on. He got to stop by. You got to show love to our reporters. So, they don't care. They're at that beast mode. I don't care who you are. You can be old and I'm going to send you to your retirement party. That's kind of like their personality. And I love to watch it. I mean, from the 1500 with Cole Hawker down to the 100. So I'm truly a fan. I mean, and everybody, make sure you watch the shot put, because the shot put has become like that event. Like, okay, you don't want somebody to tell you that somebody broke the world record. You want to watch it. You want to see what Ryan and the crew have to do. So yeah, I'm a fan.
Are you surprised that the Americans there hasn't been another 100 meter gold medalist since you?
I'm sad. I think, you know, it's been a long time, and every Olympic Games, we have an opportunity. It just does not work out. I'm hoping this year will work out. You know, we've got a great team. I think now Javion Oliver and Gabby Tom, well, she's in the 200. And also Jenna Prandini. So we've got a great team. And what I do love is that everybody who ran at the trials, they got personal best, which means that they're still rounding into shape, because usually in an Olympic year, you set yourself to peak at the trials and you set yourself to peak again at the games. So if they're, from what I saw, everybody's doing what they're supposed to do. So it's going to be interesting. And I know there's some countries out there who will have something to say, which that's why we haven't had it right now, because the Jamaicans are like, hey, you know, Shelly Ann Fraser, she's like, if I get it, I get to leave your little back-to-back group and I'm in a class all my own, be the only person to get three, which that fuels her, you know. But also Elaine Thompson, she's like, wait a minute, hold up. I won the last time. I got something to say. You got Okabar. You got about 8 people. You got about 10 people, and only 8 can go to the finals who have the capability of actually running that race. We won't know until they start running the rounds of what kind of shape or how they're actually rounding in for the finals. But it's going to come when it's supposed to happen. And I don't know when that's going to be, and I'm just going to keep cheering until it does.
Well, and what are your thoughts on, obviously we won't get to see Sha'Carri Richardson at these games. What were your thoughts on how that whole thing went down?
You know what? I when I first heard about it, first thing I said was, wow, because when she did win, she kind of led us into her life a little bit by telling us that her mom had passed away. And then when I heard that, you know, she had tested positive for marijuana, and what I appreciated is that she accepted responsibility and that she said, I knew it was on the list of what I could not do. I chose to do that as my coping, but it will never happen again. And so what I take from that, I always look for lessons, and there's lessons to be learned from. And like, I was a big I Love Lucy fan. People are like, she's crazy. What did you learn? There was lessons. She didn't know how to manage her money, you know, whatever, but there's a lesson. So what I learned from that, and what I think the teaching moment is for everyone, is that there's consequences to your actions. And if we just take that pause to think about the consequences of your actions before you act, half the things we thought about doing, we probably wouldn't do. Just like she said, that will never happen again, because you figure she trained all of this time throughout the pandemic, all of that to accomplish a goal of going to the Olympic trials and then going to the Olympic Games. And a moment, one moment in time, took that away from her. So what I know is that that's going to fuel her. I don't want to be in the lane next to her when she comes back. And she'll be back, because it was 30 days, you know, and she's going to do what she's got to do. She's taking time for herself right now. And I think that part of it, you hear so much about mental health, you know, she's 21 years old.
Yeah.
And to be 21 and be thrust into stardom, you know, and when that happens, you've got your sponsors' responsibilities. You've got to keep your training. You got photo shoots, and then you've got your family life, and you've got everybody pulling at you, and you got money associated with that. What we need to do as a community is band around our athletes, especially our young ones, mentor them, teaching them how to find different coping mechanisms, because that's not going to be the last time you're going to have something that's going to happen like that. And what you don't, and I speak from because I know what it feels like to think that you're on the top. It's like being on top of a mountain and somebody taking that mountain away. I know what that feels like when you've worked so hard for something and you don't know if you'll ever get it back. You don't know. So you make sure that you don't, like you asked me, what did I do with all the things that I had to deal with? I didn't do anything. All I did was run, and everything, if it was pain, if I couldn't feel my feet, I'm like, work your hands, your feet will keep up. I'm not doing anything that's going to jeopardize that. Because what jeopardized it before was not in my, I didn't have any control over that. So anything that I do have control over, I'm going to make sure I do it so that I can keep being Gail Devers. And that's what we've got to help our young athletes figure out, other ways of getting to the same calmness, breathing. You know, like me, they laugh. They're like, you don't run? I'm like, girl, I ran for so many years. No, I'm not trying to run. I might go out and walk, you know, and then I decided I jogged, but I'm like, I'm not sprinting. Don't ask me why I went from 100 meters to half marathon, but I did. And it was fun. I did it, but that's checked off. Don't ever have to do that again. You know, now I'm on bike riding. I'll go and ride 18 miles on my bike. And for me, it's just about staying fit. I just want to be healthy. I love life now, you know, and I want to appreciate it and be able to do all the things that I want to do. And I want other people to join me in that. So if there's any cause that I know that somebody that there's no information out there about, I'm going to open my mouth.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You talk about the Olympic pressure and you know, track and field, you have world championships. Some people may only follow the Olympics every four, you know.
Gosh, nobody knows about us until the Yes.
Do you think that that also intensifies the pressure just because all the work you do in between those years, you could win three world championships. People may not recognize that, but so many people put all the focus on every 4 years. Just what does that right. pressure feel like when, you know, I was a world champion twice, but I didn't win this race. So everyone right. thinks, okay, all the training was in vain.
Right. Well, okay, I'll use my 100-meter hurdles as that example.
Mm-hmm, you're right.
Everybody said, oh, you're a hurdler. And I always say, I'm me. And I'm a sprinter. I just happen to have to go over hurdles. So mm-hmm. I'm going to do everything that I can to run as fast. If you were to line all the hurdlers up, take the hurdles away, I wouldn't question who was going to win. Putting the hurdles, putting the barrier, that's a challenge. We got to figure it out. And so in my of running what everybody thought was my race, I hopped in the 100 to work on my speed and end up winning two back-to-back gold medals in an event that they say I'm not a sprinter. So the pressure of, like you said, the year that I don't say I failed, I say the hurdle jumped up and hit me. So that year in 92, when I ended up on the ground, you know, everybody's like, oh, is that a jinx? Is it? No. You know what? Everything happens for a reason. Had I won in 88, I probably would have retired. That I had to come back in 92. Had I won in 92 in the hurdles, I would have been like, okay, I accomplished both my goals, I'm done. But my pursuit of winning my, of what I wanted to do with my goals allowed me to have a 25 plus year career. So yeah, every 4 years, that's the only time people really think about what we do. And yeah, that's added pressure. But you kind of have to say, you know what? I can't please everybody, I gotta please me. So when I come into this arena, I got to have blinders on because everybody's talking about, oh, there's not going to be any fans in the stands. No, there's not. But when you train, I remember for 92 going into the Olympics, I knew there was going to be 100,000 people in the stands. What did that mean? That meant that I had to train myself to tune them out so that I could focus on me. So that shouldn't be an issue. And then let's say there were 100,000 people in the stands, minus one or two events where they want you to clap and the athletes are the ones that start the clap. What do they tell you to do before the start? Shh, they want everybody to be quiet. So I don't think that that's going to be the issue. I mean, they can make some fake fan noise and all that kind of stuff to make, you know, to give you the rah-rah. I do think like you're asking, is that pressure? It is. But I always say pressure is something you allow to be placed on you. You have no control over it. So if I don't have any control over it, I can't. I'm thinking about, I have one competitor, and that's the clock. I'm trying to get to the finish line.
And back in 92, there was a kid in Long Beach, a teenager who was very crushed about that hurdle too. So
I'm sorry. Sorry. I always tell people I didn't cry. They're like, you didn't. I said I didn't, because I did all that I could do on that day. And so I can't worry about it. I tell people at the end of whatever the task may be, it could be a child that has a test in school. Go home, look yourself in the mirror and ask yourself, did you do everything that you could do? If the answer is yes, you're successful. Success doesn't mean that you have to win all the races or you have to own the company or make the most money. It just means you have to be the best you can be. So if you're talking about a kid who has a test, let's say I'm the teacher and I'm like, all right, class, next Friday we have a test. Now, if you wait till next Friday when your mom is bringing you to school to start studying and then you get a big fat zero and you're like, ah, she just doesn't like me. No, you didn't study. You didn't put in what you needed to do. You did not do your best. You can't look yourself in the mirror. Now, you can tell everybody else a story and say something that's not true. But looking at yourself, you already know the answer. And so for me in the hurdles, I did all that I could do. I clawed my way to the finish line in 92. It just wasn't meant to be. But I believe in destiny. I believe that everything happens because it's supposed to happen. And on that particular day, you go back, the girl who won, history of the Olympic Games, the Olympics started in Greece. The girl who won was from Greece. Mm-hmm. She's never competed again after that, but she didn't have to, but she won that race. And how fitting was that? And that not only did she get a medal, she got a gold medal. That meant a lot to her. And had I won, I would have retired because I would have already accomplished the things I wanted. Mm. And not winning, I went on to have 25 years of a career in an event where people said, that's not your event. You are a hurdler. I'm like, yeah, I got a whole bunch of, as you say, world champion medals in the hurdles, but not in the Olympic Games. But my pursuit of that, you know, so everything happens for a reason. If I had my life to live over, I would ask for my Graves' disease again. And people are like, you're crazy. I'm like, no, because it's made me into the person that I am. And now I like myself. And it's also made me have a voice to help somebody else who may be struggling with this disease and not know, with Graves' disease or with, you know, thyroid eye disease. And I'm in the position to help them and save their quality of life. That's all it's about. My grandmother passed away at 98. And a half. I figure I'm going to be here to 100. I got to have something to do. So, hey, that's what I'm going to do. Spread the word.
Given all it took to get to Barcelona, hitting that hurdle, did that feel like, okay, all right, I didn't win that race, but considering all that you had to do to get there, did it feel like over the course of your career, that's just a blip?
It is. The sad part of the blip is that you can Google Gail Devers famous fall.
Oh, no.
And it comes
I'm not doing that. I won't.
You
do
can
that.
Do it. It's all good. It's a lesson. It just, you know, what I learned from that is I got to keep going. I got to keep striving to get to the finish line. I remember winning my first Olympic gold medal in the 100 in that same meet. And the reporter, you know, NBC reporter had the big old cameras and he was following me on my victory lap. He was like, slow down, savor the moment. I said, you better catch up because you don't know what I've gone through, you know? And that's what my career, what it symbolizes to me is the struggles that I've gone through, the ups and downs, is that nothing is guaranteed. Love life every single day. Every single day, try to do something that's going to make your life better. What can you do to make somebody else's life better? What information can you give them to save their quality of life? Remember where you came from. I think life is about access and opportunity. That's what distinguishes us. And if people would realize that, it's not race, creed, or color. And if we would realize that it's just access and opportunity, and if you would give everybody the same access and opportunity, this would be a beautiful world. But when anyone accomplishes something, if they were honest with themselves, they didn't do it by themselves. There was always a team. There's a team around them. You know, in my athletics, it was my coaches. It was, you know, my doctors, all of that. And it's the same thing now. I still have a team that helps me accomplish the things that I want to accomplish. And when somebody opens the door for you, you're supposed to wedge it open. Pull some people with you in whatever capacity, whether it be in helping to mentor track people or athletes, or whether it is to help somebody on the health side of it, whatever it is, but you don't let that door close because somebody gave you an opportunity to let you be you. And that's what I want to do. I mean, I'm going to wedge, I'm going to put my booty in it, whatever, head, big forehead, whatever I got, I'm putting it in there to keep that door open to make sure that I can help somebody else be who they want to be. Because that's what life, I mean, I always tell people dreams do come true because they do. It was my dream to go to the Olympics. And then it was my dream to go back to the Olympics. It was my dream to find Gail Devers, catch up to Gail Devers. Then it was my dream to pass her. It was my dream to be able to be a teacher. And what does a teacher do? They educate. This is my dream come true, to be able to talk to people who either know, like you guys do, or if you don't know, that I can let you know. And so I'm living my dream. I'm living my dream. And I tell people, write it down, sign it. And sometimes you have to be an advocate for your own health, whether it's on the Graves' disease side, thyroid disease side, mental health illness, whatever. You've got to advocate for what you want. And not let anyone deter you. There's two things you can do. We're all faced with challenges, and there's two things you can do when you're faced with a challenge. You can conquer it or you can be conquered. I choose to conquer every single time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Do you see your legacy being carried on by this younger generation of runners?
Well, because I have a daughter named Legacy, I can't use that word. Because she always says, oh, Legacy, that's a cool, people say, that's a cool name. What's your legacy? She says, to just be me. Uh-huh. And so I'm going to take a page out of her book. I don't think I have a legacy. I just want to be Gail. Mm-hmm. I really just want to be Gail. And I want to enjoy all that God has in store for me. I say that I have a guardian angel that rests on my shoulder. And as long as I live my life right, he's going to bless me. It may not be the way I thought it would be, but it's the way it's supposed to be. So I don't question why. I just keep living.
Right.
How did you come up with the name Legacy? I'm curious.
I thought, okay, so my first daughter's name is Carson. It's K-A-R-S-E-N. She lets you know, because everybody's like, oh, C-A-R. She did, when she was like two, she's like, no, that's for a boy. C-A-R, boy, and S-O-N, that's a son. No, I'm Carson. I'm like, okay. So then I was like, okay, let me switch it up, because she's just going to be that difficult one. So I thought my second pregnancy was going to be a boy. I was like, I think I was meant to have a girl and a boy, then, you know, I'm good. And I just assumed until went to the doctor, saw the ultrasound, and she was a girl. And we couldn't see for a while because she was like, no paparazzi, get away. So once we figured it out, my husband was like, it just must be your legacy to have girls. And I was like, oh, I like that name, Legacy Brielle. Let's work with it. So that's basically where it came from. It had nothing to do with anything other than I think it was my legacy to have girls. And we'll see what that means.
Well, you might not think you have a legacy, but we are all very grateful for the legacy that you have left us. And thank you so much for joining us and for the conversation. Thank you for raising awareness for Graves' disease. And I can't wait to just watch this Olympics in whatever form it ends up happening.
Exactly. We're gonna say a prayer that they stay safe. Because there's some stuff running rampant. So we want them to run, not the disease to run. But I do, from the bottom of my heart, appreciate you guys. Thank you for allowing me to come on. I want to say thank you to Horizon. They know I love them, but they allowed for me to just open my mouth and talk. And, you know, I got the gift of gab. So I just keep doing it. And hopefully in the conversations that we are having, somebody's listening that has Graves' disease or that doesn't have it, and they're going to be made aware of those symptoms, or those with Graves' disease will say, uh-oh, wait a minute, I'm going to pay attention to my eye health too and go to that website. And so I love you guys and appreciate you. I'm sorry I failed. I didn't mean to do it, Jason.
Like I said, you know, my mom, whenever you were running, my mom let me know, Gail is on, you know, get by the TV. So, you know.
Tell your mom, give her a hug for me. I love it.
I'm going to see her this weekend. I will do that.
Oh, very good. Well, thank you guys for allowing me to do this and for helping us to pass the word and get it out there. You guys are cool. I love the how you guys play off of each other. So this was a very cool interview. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Gail. And have a great rest of your
day. All right. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to Culture Calculus. If you like our show, make sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. We'll see you next week.